In Acts 17, the apostles begin to travel south. It says they go through a place called Amphipolis, Apollonia, and then they came to Thessalonica, or Thessaloniki, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. So, for three straight Saturdays in Thessaloniki, Paul goes to the synagogue, and he talks about Christ, and he preaches Christ. And it says in verse 4 that some of them were persuaded, Jews and Gentiles. But some Jews who were not persuaded became jealous, and they raised a mob to come threaten Paul. And they dragged a man named Jason, who'd evidently showed hospitality and friendship to the apostles, before the authorities, and they began to accuse him. And they accuse him of defying Roman law and acting against Caesar, saying that there's another king, Jesus. So Paul and Silas escape from Thessaloniki, and they come to a place called Berea. Now, Berea is famous because of verse 11. It says that the people in Berea examined the Scriptures daily to see if these things were true. And this is a model for us in Bible study. Let's say you hear a Bible teacher. Let's say he says new things. He says things you've never heard before. He says things that are exciting. How do you know whether it's true? You've got to study the Bible yourself. You've got to be sure that what he's saying is what the Scripture says. No priest, no bishop, no pope. You examine the Bible yourself. You study the Bible yourself. That's a noble thing to do. Notice what it says in verse 11. The seekers in Berea were more noble than those in Thessaloniki. They examined the Scriptures every day to see if those things were true. It says that many believed. There were even prominent Gentiles who believed, men and women. But now the Jews catch up to Paul in Thessaloniki also, or in Berea also, and stir up the crowds. Paul talks in 2 Corinthians about a thorn in the flesh. Most Bible teachers have thought that the thorn in the flesh was a physical problem, maybe blindness, maybe epilepsy, maybe something else that brought pain to his body. But it's very interesting that Paul does not use the word for body. He doesn't say a pain in my body. He says a pain in the flesh, my fleshly nature. Our flesh is that part of us which lives independently of God. And some people believe that the thorn in the flesh may have been the fact that every place Paul went and preached the gospel and had success, the Jews would come and spoil everything. And Paul said that one reason God allowed the thorn is so he wouldn't become proud. You know, I think if he only had a physical problem, that wouldn't necessarily keep him from becoming proud. But you know, if you had a tendency to think, I've done a great work, this work is wonderful, and nothing ever spoiled the work, it just kept getting greater and greater and greater, you might have a tendency to be proud. So all I'm saying is this, I don't know what the thorn in the flesh was. I think it's wise that we don't know, because if we did know, we'd say, oh, well, the problem I have is harder than that. So we're never tempted to compare because we don't really know what his thorn in the flesh was. But it could have been not sickness, not a bodily problem, but the fact that everywhere he went, he was followed by what we might call anti-missionaries. Those who would try to, you know, it's like you're building a track for a train to run on. And you lay down the track, and you lay down the track, and you work hard, and you lay down the track. and somebody's coming right behind you, ripping up the track, ripping up the track, ripping up the track. That was Paul's experience as a missionary. That's what happened. And maybe, not certainly, but maybe, that was the thorn in the flesh. So they caused problems in Berea, like they had caused problems in Thessaloniki. And now, without Silas and Timothy, Paul goes to Athens by himself. And when we come to Athens, we come to one of the most famous sermons in church history and one of the most famous sermons in the book of Acts. The famous sermon preached on Mars Hill. The Greek would be Areopagus. We would say Mars Hill. That hill in Athens, which was devoted to the god of war. Paul comes to Athens, and it says in verse 16 that when he saw all the idols, it upset him. He saw all the false worship, all the false religion, how the people had all this spiritual energy, and they were spending it on something that hurt them spiritually, not something that helped them spiritually. They spent their time worshiping false gods. And verse 16 says that really, really hurt Paul. It upset him. So every day he's reasoning in the synagogue with the Jews. Now, I want to say something about witnessing. It's very, 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 very hard to witness to somebody that you don't know. It's very, very hard to begin a conversation about Jesus, because most people don't want to talk about anything like that. So you've got to be brave, and you've got to be persistent, and you've got to be willing to be unpopular. You've got to be willing to be rejected. Just remember, Christ was rejected. So you have an opportunity to share in His rejection. If you try to initiate an evangelistic conversation with somebody who doesn't really want to talk about spiritual things, people are going to hell. We've got to stop them. But they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to be reminded. They don't want to be informed that one day they're going to die. And it's very hard to talk about that with somebody that you don't know. And it's so hard that some people make excuses by saying that we're not even supposed to do that. That kind of evangelism doesn't work. That we just need to do our evangelism in the church, or we need to do our evangelism in Bible studies, or we need to do our evangelism with people that we know. But the verse for that is Acts 17:17. Acts 17:17 says that Paul went into the agora, the Greek marketplace in Athens, and he witnessed, he talked about Jesus with whoever happened to be there. There was a place he targeted called the synagogues. He always went to the synagogues, but he didn't only go to the synagogues, where people expected to talk about religion, where people expected to talk about the Bible and eternity and spiritual things and sin and forgiveness and God and your soul. You expect to talk about those things in the synagogue, but you don't expect to talk about those things in the marketplace. And Paul went into the marketplace and he talked to whoever happened to be there. Now, obviously, Athens was a place of great learning, and it was a place, along with Tarsus, where there was a great university in the ancient world. It was a place which knew great philosophers, Socrates, who taught Plato, who taught Aristotle, who for a short time was a tutor to Alexander. It was a place of great writers, the writers of Greek tragedy, the great plays. It was a place of great architecture. You can go to Athens today and you can see the Parthenon, which was devoted to the goddess Athena, whom Athens takes its name from. I mentioned earlier that I think Red Square is so beautiful to see at night. And if you ever go to Athens, be sure you look at the Parthenon at night, because I think it's even more beautiful by night. And the Parthenon was hundreds of years old by the time Paul was there. And Paul goes to this place and he encounters the different schools of philosophy. Two of the great schools of philosophy are mentioned in verse 18, the Epicurean philosophers and the Stoic philosophers. Marcus Aurelius, a second century Roman emperor, was influenced by Stoic philosophy. And they weren't very nice to him. These people were professional talkers. They were intellectually arrogant. They thought they knew everything. They thought they'd heard everything. And they call him a babbler, a person who just talks meaninglessly. What would this idle babbler wish to say? He seems to be a proclaimer of strange deities. In other words, he seems to be talking about gods we've never heard of, because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection. Now, the word resurrection in Greek is Anastasia. It's a perfectly good Russian name. You know, the czar, the last czar's youngest daughter was named that. And it means Anastasia. It means resurrection. There's some people who think that some of these philosophers may have thought that Paul was preaching about a god and his wife, Jesus and Anastasia. That Anastasia was actually the name of a goddess. And they completely understand what he was saying when he would proclaim Jesus and the resurrection. That's how clueless they were. That's how badly they misunderstood him. That's a possibility. So we've come right on up to the point where Paul is about to preach his great sermon on Mars Hill. It's a sermon that we can learn so very much from when it comes to evangelism, when it comes to apologetic.
TVS is a nonprofit project. Our joint effort will bring about the common purpose of making Christian education available around the world and developing good Christian servant leaders. You have a unique opportunity to partner in this effort through your prayer and or financial support of TVS Ministry. For more information, please visit www.tvseminary.com.
If you go to Athens today, of course, the ruins of the Parthenon are there. That's the most famous site in Athens. That's one of the most famous sites in the world. The ruins of this temple to Pallas Athene, one of the Greek goddesses, the goddess of wisdom. And just to one side of the Parthenon is a little hill. And most Christians who go to Athens and who visit that place, they step up to the top of that hill. I've been to the top of that hill. That's Mars Hill. It's like a natural raised platform. So when the philosophers gathered to talk, the person that they listened to would climb to the top of that little hill, and then he would speak to the people. Well, this is what Paul did 2,000 years ago. In verse 19, they say, "May we know what this new teaching is which you are proclaiming, for you're bringing strange things to our ears, and we want to know what you mean." Now, in Christianity, we have this thing called apologetics. In English, the word apology means, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it. I shouldn't have done that. I feel bad that I hurt you or that I offended you." That's an apology. It comes from the word that we get the word apologetics from, but Christian apologetics doesn't mean I'm sorry. It doesn't mean I shouldn't have done it. Apologetics is a defense. It's a defense of the truth. You and I are called to believe something, but we're not called to believe something without evidence. We're not called to believe something without confirmation. Do we have to exercise faith? Yes, we do. Why? Because we don't see everything. We do have questions. There may be things that confuse us, that puzzle us. There may be even be things that bother us because we don't know the answer. But what we do see gives us great confidence. It gives us confidence that our faith is justified. It gives us confidence that we have reason to believe and to trust. And so apologetics gives more reasons, brings more light. And what Paul does in Athens is he brings an apologetic, a defense of the Christian faith before the Athenian philosophers, the pagan thinkers of his day. When I became a Christian in 1971, almost 40 years ago this year, I didn't think there was much evidence. I had never been exposed to apologetics. I thought that I was becoming a Christian just because I'd grown to love Jesus. I believed the story about his death and the resurrection, and I thought that I had great faith. Well, that's silly because I don't have great faith. My faith is very small. And very, very soon after I became a Christian, I was shocked at how much evidence there was. Absolutely shocked. I couldn't believe how much evidence there was. In every area of investigation, in every academic discipline, in every compartment of thought and investigation, we discover great evidence. Even in those places where we've been brainwashed to think that there are great doubts which are brought upon the Christian faith because of the evidence, in places like the natural sciences. Augustine said, all truth is God's truth, so we mustn't be afraid to investigate anything. If we look at truth deeply enough, and if we look at truth comprehensively enough, we will see a wonderful evidence that there's one God who made heaven and earth, and Jesus of Nazareth is his son. So here Paul faces the great Athenian philosophers. Verse 21, Luke says that the Athenians used to spend time doing nothing more than telling about something new. You see, they accuse him of being an idle babbler in verse 18. That's really what they were. They were idle babblers. They just sat around all the time and talk, didn't do anything. And so when he comes with a doctrine they've never heard, they don't know anything about, they call him an idle babbler.
Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 10, 11. How to give to TVS Ministry. You may give online at efta.org/givenow. In the description place, write Russia Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Or make checks out to EFCA. Write on the check memo line, Russian Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Mail to EFCA Donor Services, 901 East 78th Street, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55420-1300. Or send your gift through PayPal for tvs.gift@gmail.com.